on. Cristobal Ramirez, how are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me. How are you doing?
I'm doing good as well. And yeah, I'm excited to talk something adjacent to memes. So yeah, it's something that I always want to talk about regarding philosophy, because, you know, philosophy have to adjust with modern trends, where we, you know, millennials, Gen Z, and the next generations always talk about, always communicate, not always, but mainly communicate through social media and use patterns like memes and, you know, weird languages. I don't think it's weird because, sure, I went off a little bit of tangent right there. First of all, can you introduce yourselves?
Yeah, sure. So my name's Cristobal Ramirez. I just recently graduated from the University of British Columbia over in Canada, in Vancouver, Canada. I did a double major. One was in philosophy and the other one was in psychology. And now I'm just working as a teacher, as a psychology teacher, and soon to be a math teacher as well, funny enough, even though that wasn't any of my, I didn't do any studies in that, but I might be starting that up soon. What else about me? I guess I've been interested in philosophy since as early as I can remember. One funny anecdote, I guess I could say, people often ask, what was the first like introduction to philosophy you had? And so I tell them this really funny story. It was one time when I was with my family around, hanging out around the couch watching a movie. And for one reason or another, I turned to my parents and I asked them, Mom, Dad, how do I know you're real? How do I know you're not a robot? And they looked at me and they're a little bit confused. They're like, what do you mean? Of course, look, I'm made out of meat. I'm like, no, Mom, Dad, you don't understand. What if you're a really advanced robot, like some sort of a Terminator? And they're like, no, of course, how do I know you're not lying? And then I ended up getting very, I freaked myself out. I started like, I went into a spiral of wondering like, who was conscious? How can we prove someone else is conscious? What it means to be human, blah, 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 blah. Locked myself in the washroom for 30 minutes and then cried my eyes out. And this was at the age of around like, what, maybe 7 years old. Funny enough, my sister still teases me about it. Still, every now and then she'll turn to me and just go, beep, boop, bop, I'm a robot, just to mess with me. But yeah, I think that was one of the earliest introductions to philosophy. Ever since then, I've been pretty interested in it, and then decided to go ahead and study it formally at university and hoping to continue into master's and PhD, as I grow up.
So do you already have a proper justification as why your parents is not robot after learning philosophy?
I still don't. No, I still hold that like a skeptic little like urge or itch in me that I haven't been able to get rid of very easily.
Okay, so neither of us can justify between ourselves that neither of us is robot, right? Yeah, that's a very tough question, actually.
Yeah, I could not prove it to you, but pragmatically speaking, you can't live your life, you know, properly always questioning that. So I just kind of take it for granted on surface level. But if I'm really pressed, if you try and push me into a corner to try and prove whether or not you're a robot or I'm a robot, I wouldn't be able to. There's no neat argument I can give you to justify that.
But is there any other reason why you choose philosophy major?
Why? Well, I was also introduced to the French existentialists in high school. So after getting enrolled into university, I took a couple of intro courses. And then from then I was hooked. As a kid, I was always really curious about physics and science. And so a lot of the fundamental questions that physics tries to answer are also in one way answerable. Or, I mean, you can only answer so much with physics and sciences. And there comes a certain point where you need to go into metaphysics or just philosophy. And I guess that's what I was most interested in the big questions. What came before? Was there something before nothing? Why are we here? You know, those types of intro questions that everyone has growing up. I really like latched onto those. And I guess that was why I was so interested in philosophy growing up.
What were the reaction of your family when they know that you choose philosophy?
They're very, very supportive. I can't say No, they've been completely supportive the whole time. I think they're glad that I also went down the psychology route because it's a little more practical in
Yeah.
the, getting a job like this is in ancient Greece. You can't walk around and think. No one pays you to do that anymore. But no, they're very, very supportive and happy that I went down that route. And yeah, I think the whole goal is to become a professor one day with enough time. But yeah, I think they're pretty content with that decision. They've been very like open parents and encouraging of anything I wanted to learn. I'm very thankful for that. Yeah.
Okay. I found you running a Instagram account, the Phil Officer. This is the reason why I invite you to the podcast. First of all, why did you create that account?
Honestly, I couldn't give you a good reason. I'm someone who really likes jokes and messing around. I don't take many things very seriously. Everything's a bit of, a gag to me. So I would very often see like jokes or think of little like philosophy jokes. And I never knew that if I started posting them, there would be people who would actually also understand it. I always thought it was very, very niche.
Yeah.
But funny enough, yeah, I was pretty surprised to see that there's like a really big community or following on the internet of people that are genuinely interested in philosophy beyond very like superficial questions, which was really, really cool. I just liked jokes. I would collect these memes or make some jokes between friends and then started posting them. And then I guess it just took off. That was about a year ago, maybe.
What is the funniest memes that you find about philosophy?
The funniest memes, I like the ones
Yeah.
that basically make fun of yourself. If you take a look through the page, a lot of the things will be like shooting myself in the foot or roasting myself, saying like how useless a philosophy degree is in the job market or how impractical it might be to have all these questions and never get over them. Arguments that never have an end or never have a definitive yes or no answer. You're just like running around in circles, basically. Verbal masturbation is what Wittgenstein called it.
Yeah.
It's just you're just having fun with your brain. There's no practicality to it. You're not really advancing anything in the same way you would if you're building a house or if you're cooking a meal. Nothing's really getting physically done other than entertaining thoughts. But that's fun for me, so yeah, I make fun of myself for that.
What I think about the philosophy memes when I first encounter with your account, I always think that philosophy, well, especially people who's engaged in philosophy, treat philosophy a little bit way too seriously. I think their way to engage with themselves about their own ideas, to the point that they're kind of forget that what they do is actually quite funny to outside people. I mean, yeah, we already heard many stories about, ancient philosophers doing philosophy, right? Especially people like Diogenes, yeah, we take him a little bit way too seriously, I think, but although there are profound things about him that we can of course learn. But yeah, I don't think he's that serious engaging in his own philosophy. I kind of think that we as a people that's engage ourselves in philosophy must be a little bit, cut a little slack. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What do you think? What do you think about that?
No, I totally agree, and especially in the more academic setting, there's a type of like stereotype attached to people who study philosophy that's they're a little bit like snobbish or a little bit prestigious or a lot of gatekeeping and name dropping and thinking you're smarter than everyone else, just having a really big ego, and to some extent that is true, I think. And as a little bit like of a retaliation to that, I like to go the other way and just make absolute jokes about the type of stuff that we do. It's accepted more nicely by some people than others. Other people don't like this image being attacked of themselves of like a intellectual, and all of a sudden you're making jokes about them. But yeah, just like you referenced, like Diogenes or just funnier philosophers of the past. Like I that's the approach I like to take with it. Philosophy should be fun. It shouldn't be this
Yeah.
life or death, I'm gonna stab you in the throat type of argument thing. It should be a little more playful than that.
Philosophy should be fun. You're the second person I've ever heard saying that. The first one is Joe Schmidt from Majesty of Reason. He's do you know his channel?
No, I don't.
Oh yeah, he's he focused more on the philosophy of religion, but he's and he's extremely analytical to the point that he talks much more in logical syllogism rather than coherent English language. But yeah, he said philosophy is fun, so it should be fun. I think that is a that is a that is, I think that's an oxymoron. I mean, philosophy has to be the opposite of fun, but now I know that it's not true. I mean, like, we can do it the fun way. But it's not but what do you think about the newer kind of philosophy style? I don't think he's a philosopher, but what do you think of Jordan Peterson? I think he's the one fun guy, you know. But we make fun of him on his expense. What do you think of it?
I've only watched a few lectures from him and read a couple excerpts, so I can't speak too much to him. But if I were to give like my candid opinion, he's more of a psychologist than a philosopher. He's very well spoken, and I guess he's talked about a lot because he blew up on social media, or his media presence exploded. But no, I wouldn't put him up there as one of my favorite philosophers, to be quite honest. But of course, he's a brilliant guy. You're right, right? He has his doctorate. He's a well-known psychologist. Like, he's a smart guy. But his philosophy side of it's a little bit. He's a bit reductionist in some of his arguments, I would think. But that's only coming from like a brute logical philosophical interpretation of him. Sometimes he shouldn't be taken as seriously as some philosophers take him. But yeah, no, I don't think too much of him. But he is a big media presence. I will give him that.
I think his he makes a he's very famous. We have to give him that. And in most of his things that he discussed, always kind of philosophy adjacent. You cannot hear his lectures without thinking of what he says philosophically. I think his kind of language, rhetorical style, warrants a very deep philosophical review. In my own opinion, it's very rarely I ever see philosophers doing that online, especially. One of my problems with modern philosophy, I think they engage way too little with the public, especially in the online spaces. If there's no people engaging in popular person like Jordan Peterson, I'm afraid that many people will see philosophy as the way Jordan Peterson explains about it, express it. I've ever saw one or two philosopher making fun of him, you being one of them, in your account, but more to making a caricature of him. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, a bit. The way I see it, I'm super thankful that there are at least some figures in modern day, thanks to social media, some figures that can kind of like tie or like make a bridge between the academic world, which is like closed gates, smarty pants, arguing with each other over like papers that are 100 pages long that no one ever reads in the public. Those guys, and then the public, right? And there's this nice bridge of people like Jordan Peterson, who allow the public, like give them like little like peek, a little like view into the academic world of all the thoughts being done or thoughts being had. And I think that's super important, kind of like the way Carl Sagan was the type of person to bridge, like cosmology to the public, like present it in like a palatable way, in a way that's easy to understand and easy to engage with. And I think that's very lacking nowadays. There's a big, big divide between like the snobby 1,000 word essays that no one reads of like logical induction, and then just the public, like two guys sitting on a park bench drinking a beer, asking each other what the meaning of life is. Like, there's no in between. So I think it's very important to have people like Jordan Peterson, or Yeah, just other like mainstream philosophers kind of engage with the public, because it would be quite unfortunate if you go your whole life and not engage with philosophy, because I think it's too fun. It's too fun to not mess around with, at least at one point.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you that we philosophy is fun and it's cool to have an ability to engage in it, especially in public. But I rarely see people. It's a very rare kind of content we see nowadays. I'm sorry if I use the word content because that's the only media that we have to engage in the public settings. But I think you in some way your channel, the Phil Officer, doing kind of just that. You do realize, right? You create an image, basically a memes, and then you make some explanation in the what do we say about it? In the com not the comment
The
section.
caption.
Yeah, the
In the
caption. Yeah,
caption,
you realize that, right?
Yeah, no, that's kind of my goal. That's where I like to, aim my posts towards. There's the funny joke or the funny image or the funny song or whatever it is, something that catches your eye. And then in the caption, it's a brief summary. It's like a nugget of philosophy. Maybe it's a brief summary of the cosmological argument or a brief summary of empiricism or a brief summary of another philosophical position. And it's just like little like bite-sized philosophy things that often relate to the image, but sometimes they might not even relate. But I
Yeah.
think it's super important to connect the whole like academia, higher learning, big brain stuff with just the common person. There needs to be a bridge, and I'm hoping that my account is, maybe helping out at least a tiny bit, bridging this divide between these two worlds that I see.
Do you think it's worth it if you pursue the career of an meme philosophical meme account admin? I mean,
I don't know about that. I don't know how fulfilling that would be in the long run, but it is something I would like to keep doing, just like as a hobby, as a side thing. Because I mean, I'm already always thinking about these things, being in school or like pursuing masters. You're already thinking about a lot of this stuff. So why not make a little joke out of it? And why not have some fun with it? If I can, I think I'll always keep it there in one form or another. Maybe it turns into a podcast, maybe it turns into a YouTube channel, but it is something I would like to keep doing, but I don't know, as like as a career. I would like to target myself a little more to the professorship or like to the academic route. But still, I like this because it's a connection to like the real world out there, like actual people. So I find that pretty good. Yeah.
Here's an idea. Why don't you? This is just my suggestion. Why don't you make your dissertation idea about memifying philosophy, or something like that? It's a cool
No,
idea, right? It's very novel.
that's very interesting. Yeah, not a bad idea for some sort of a thesis or a project. I am aware it has been done a couple times, at least in classical philosophy. It's like classical philosophy engaging with media, how the media perceives philosophy. And when you ask the average person what type of if you ask them like what is philosophy, the media we kind of think of as like, okay, a Greek guy sitting on a stone going like this. Like that's the image everyone has in their head. So it would be interesting to see how that might be changing, right? If you ask someone what philosophy is now, maybe they'll say, oh, like Nietzsche, or like, oh, like Albert, like existentialism, or something like that. So it'd be quite interesting to take a look at the way it's viewed or portrayed in the media. Good idea. I like it. I'll keep that one in the back of my pocket and give you some credit if a paper ever comes out.
Yeah, I'm waiting for that. There is another kind of it's not necessarily an idea, but it's just things that already running around in my head about I grew up in the 2000s, so but I really engage in social media in the early 2010s because the availability of fast internet service in Indonesia is not really available until the end of 2000s. There were a very big shift in online culture back then. So we start to know things about memes. We make a lot of memes, and then those memes eventually evolved into new type of memes, and then keep evolving into a point that it's become something so absurd. I think if you are chronically online like me, you know that there's the new kind of memes nowadays we call a brain rot. Have you ever heard of that?
Yeah, I'm well aware of brain rot.
Okay, so many people kind of despise this kind of new trends of Gen Alpha. They always say that it's a denigration of their own thinking capability. But most of them kind of didn't realize that we millennials have their weird memes as well, called the dang memes era, or the absurd or post-ironic memes. So it's kind of evolving. And I think it evolves similar to how we human evolved. I think this kind of issue of how we kind of collectively create memes and you know, making a parody of it in social media, it's kind of a reflection of the way we think. It's kind of like, you know, because the meme is our the extension of our personality. I kind of think that we can make something some serious academic discussion about it. So yeah, that's an idea. I think it's kind of cool if you consider it. What do you think about that?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I mean, it's become a new form of communication, right? We have communication just like verbally when we're talking. We have communication through our body language, through the way we're presenting ourselves, like an unspoken one. And now all of a sudden we have this new form of communication, which is through memes. And yeah, like a picture can really say 1,000 words. There can be so much referencing or so much information in one little post, referencing a million things. And it has become a little like reflection of your personality. It's funny, if you ask anyone for their phone and you go through their For You page, you get an idea of who they are or what they find funny or what they find interesting. It is like a cool way to express yourself almost. It's like this weird evolution. This weird linguistic evolution we're going through. I remember, like, also maybe 10 or so years ago, it would start off with things like Vine, or really simple like memes, which with like the same template and the big bold white letters, or Charlie bit my finger, or those types of things. So it's really interesting to see how much it's evolved and how complex they've gotten. Because back then it was maybe like a voiceover of a dog moving his lips, right? And now it's just become this absolute crazy nonsensical, nightmarish type of like video that makes no sense, like the brain rot you see nowadays. So it's very, very interesting to see this evolution of memes from like our standpoint, being like relatively young and growing up with it. I'm curious to see where it ends up in the next 10 years. If brain rot's where it is right now, I'm very curious what happens in 10 years. Yeah,
I think, I mean, if we apply Socratic method about all of this phenomenon, right? I mean, like, the first question that we have to ask is, I think, like Socrates always do, what is a meme? But not what we always see it in the Wikipedia channel, but what is the most fundamental aspects of memes? I think it's a very good question to ask, especially in regards of the evolution of it. I mean, why did people enjoy brain rot memes? I think it's a very good philosophical question that many philosophers kind of don't really think of it that seriously, I guess. I'm not an academic, so I don't really aware of those kind of things, but I think you can understand what this is. One of my, you know, this is one of my passion, both memes and philosophy. Yes. What do you think of that? I'm sorry if I ask way too much about the things.
Oh, no, I'm loving it. I'm loving it. I think it can be viewed as, so we had the whole Renaissance movement, or like this whole artistic or impressionist era in art, right? And then it moved towards maybe more contemporary art, more abstract art, things that don't necessarily make a lot of sense. And the same thing can be seen happening with memes, or like with the things we post online. They started off being like trying to be like official, professional, like you start your own website, and they start, it's almost like a revolt, or like a battle against like all of this conformity or all of this like proper stuff. And then memes come out, just like modern art comes out. And it's just totally nonsensical. It's not supposed to make sense. It's just absurd. So it's very interesting. I see it almost like, yeah, like a retaliation towards all of the corporate, business, official side of the internet. which is cool, which is cool to see come out. Yeah, I think you could make a little analogy between like contemporary art and memes nowadays.
I think Albert Camus gonna love brain rot so much. You know, he's an absurdist after all,
Oh,
right?
likely, likely.
Okay. Let's talk about your psychology and math, right? You're majoring in math, do you? What is the connection between philosophy and psychology?
It's very interesting. That's actually one of the areas I'd like to continue studying, the philosophy of cognitive science. It's basically it's trying to answer or help answer questions about free will, agency, perception, things like that, but maybe from a little more scientific and from more of a scientific angle. There was one really interesting study, for example, that I think I talked about in one of my captions, but it went something along the lines of mapping moral judgments. So I'm sure you're aware of like the trolley problem, right? On one side you have people that will value more people more than one person, like you'd rather save 10 people versus your mom. And then on the other hand, you have people who would do the other thing. And these are two moral judgments people seem to have. So a bunch of psychologists and neuroscientists kind of set out to see if there's any literal neural correlates or like things we can see that are different between the what you would call utilitarians or the deontologists, right? These two different moral positions. And funny enough, they found different regions of the brain working when you're trying to process or answer these questions. So it's pretty interesting to take these philosophical questions and apply a little bit of science to it and see if we can find any like direct neural correlates to things we used to think were like very fluffy or very mystical. Like now we know that a moral judgment is a direct connection from part A to part B. And if it's stronger in this person, then it's more likely that they'll give this moral judgment versus that one. So it's pretty interesting. I like that whole psychology. I'm not too into the personality psychology or like the pop psychology. That's like the antichrist to me. And I think social media has completely like misappropriated what psychology is now. But oh well, nothing much you can do about that. But yeah, I do like taking a look at philosophical questions with a scientific angle. So like I'm sure you're also aware of the other of one experiment where it was they would record someone's brain and then they would ask them to press a button or decide to press a button. And that experiment was trying to hint at or point at or answer the question of free will. It's what when we have when do we make this choice, this free choice? And funny enough, every time you would go and try and press this button, the psychologists or the people reading the screen on their computers, they already knew you made the decision before you yourself knew you made the decision. So it's pretty cool that you can investigate philosophical questions with modern day psychology now that we have all these brain mappings and all these tools. So I think yeah, they go hand in hand pretty nicely for me, which is why I couldn't choose between one or the other, so I had to study both. Yeah.
I want to ask you about this. What do you think in modern context, the relation between science and philosophy?
That's an interesting question. What is the relationship? I think there's a misconception or misunderstanding in the general public that thinks that philosophical questions have already been answered by science, which just isn't the case. Science is purely descriptive, right? It can explain how things work. It can explain all the intricacies of a system or all the constants of nature. But it can't get at the deeper questions. It can't get at the why. It can't get at why logic is the way it is, or why the speed of light is the speed of light. That's beyond science, and that's where philosophy still has its place, and I think will always have its place. But nowadays, you have people saying, "Oh, well, didn't science already disprove God?" It's like, it's like that doesn't really it doesn't work like that. But I think their relationship is a lot closer than it used to be. That's for sure. There are a lot of questions that have been answered, thanks to science. And they're complementary. I don't think they go against each other. Some people think that they are a little bit like antithetical, like they butt heads, but I think that they go hand in hand pretty nicely. Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of think that the relationship between philosophy and science is where science is a method of knowledge acquisition, whereas philosophy is more of a knowledge assessment and evaluation. So, yeah, I agree with you that science cannot answer all things, especially the whyness of things, right? We cannot know why the logic is the way it is. But I don't think philosophy could answer that either. What do you think the philosophical answer of such question, the whyness of everything?
The whyness of everything. The thing with any philosophical question or argument is that, yes, there's always going to be answers, but you need to commit or believe an answer. In any given argument, you have premises, and you either accept them as truth or reject them as false. And it's up to each person to decide what they accept as a truth in an argument, follow along with it, and then that's what they believe. I guess philosophy answered your question, or reject it and keep trying to figure out something better, something more appealing. Which is quite interesting because it's up to each person. It's a very, very personal thing, philosophy and its arguments. Logic will always stay the same, but the validity of the truth value of a statement, of a premise, it'll depend on the person you ask.
Okay, so we have philosophy, we have science. They are kind of neatly have a good relation between each other. And then there's one more kind of things come along, which they try to fit in as well. We call that religion or theology. Where do you put theology in this kind of relationship thingy?
Theology. Interesting question. Most of my university was actually studying philosophy of religion. There was this one professor, Dr. Kral, who that was his specialty. So all of his classes, all of his seminars, they were geared exactly to those, to theology, basically, to like arguments for God, arguments against God, and so on. I would place it somewhere closer to philosophy, as opposed to science. There's a big psychological and sociological aspect to religions, since it's so dynamic and so like it's between people, right? It's hard to believe something as an individual and call that a religion. Religion is a collective thing. It needs to be done by a group of people. And once you introduce a group of people, then you start getting sociological phenomenon and group psychology type things happening. So I would place it a little bit closer to philosophy, but not completely separated from science at all. Of course, there are underpinnings, things like existence of God, which are just like beyond. There's also logic, which I think if I were like to like visualize the way these things work, I would put like logic at the very, very bottom. So like the law of non-contradiction, or like just basic logical rules. And then on top of it, you can have science and then philosophy. And then maybe up here you'll have religion as like a in the humanities, or like as a philosophical or like social type thing. Where would you put it? Where do you think that fits? Where do you think religion goes?
I have this kind of picture about those three relationships. So, I think I view these three things as the way human making sense of the world around us. So, we develop religion because our lacks of understanding and our the tools that available for us at our time. So we develop such easy answer for everything that happens. Let's say like there's thunders happening, there's volcano erupting. Why is that happen? Because we don't have time to evaluate all of that, then we develop ad hoc answers about, oh, there must be an agent that caused that to happen. Therefore, that's a theological answer, right? In my own opinion. And then came the era of the Greek philosophy, the classical Greek, where people start to have much, much more time to engage with these kind of questions, and they start to develop critical thinking, rationality. And then Aristotle came along, and they start to employ logics and scientific methods, if I'm not mistaken, that he helped to develop. And then came, you know, we don't talk about the medieval era, and then came the Renaissance and the modern times, where we kind of have a very, very much more advanced tool of knowing things. We call it science. So, in my own opinion, I think religion is, in terms of how we know things, it's a very obsolete way of inquisition, knowledge inquisition. And I don't see it as a you know, social things that people bond over or associate themselves with, because religion tends to give answers to almost everything. Most of the answer I find wrong. I think if science, if philosophy is a person, he's like the wise daddy of science. So you can imagine that one day there is an old man, yes, stereotypical old man with a beard like Socrates. But this time he had a son. He said to his son, "Bro, I'm not bro. Son, explore the world. Try to find new things. And here's a tool for you." He gave him two tools. The first one is his own method to question things. The second one is a magnifying glass. Let's say it's like a logic, tools of logic. So yeah, the kids with all the science kids with all the tools available for him start to discover new things. And then because with his discovery and with the available tools with him, they can the kids can make a very, very good observation about things around him. And then the kids coming back to his home and then start to present all the scientific data he's achieved. At that point, I think the daddy philosopher have two options: either to reassess what the kid's finding and evaluate all of his findings, or, you know, this is my own opinion, okay? This is my own opinion. Or, you know, we can just say whatever he finds, the kid finds, "Oh no, you cannot answer all of that. Therefore, philosophy." That's just one of my thinking. So yeah, to get back to your question, I think that the kind of relationship that they have is in regards of knowledge. I know this is a very narrow way to think about things as broad as that, but yeah, I think of them like that.
I like that. No, that makes a lot of sense to me as a tool of logic, a tool to answer questions. People hate not knowing things, not having answers. It's very uncomfortable. As kids, I'm sure everyone's experienced it. Everyone's had that why phase, that "Mom, why this? Dad, why this? Why that?" And often you could say that, yes, religion might just be a byproduct of this lack of knowledge. You know, we need these beliefs and stuff to comfort a little bit. That would be one side of the argument. You can also just go the other side of the argument and say it truly is something divine, something metaphysical, something like bestowed and given to humans. But that's, I guess, for each person to decide. Very interesting. I like the idea of religion as a tool of knowledge. It's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So here's my story. When I deconverted back in 2020, I feel a lot of existential angst after that. I always think that religion has all the answer about everything around us. And then when I ditch all of that, I kind of feel like I don't know anything. I feel very anxious. And then I just go around in the world like for 2 years without knowing anything and always deconstructing everything until I meet with philosophy, in which I try to, in which they help me making sense of the world. Do you ever feel like such existential angst in your life?
Yes, very, very often. Probably a couple times every day. It is, I think, I was always trying to find a solution, an outlet, like some answers, and it was the French existentialists like Sartre and Camus and all those people, yeah. All of those guys who offered a non-theistic argument or non-theistic position you could have, which is, instead of seeing it like some sort of condemnation, you can see it like some sort of freedom. Like, you're granted this absolute freedom to do whatever you want, right? Or to think whatever you want, or ascribe meaning to anything, whichever way you want. It's not already set in stone the way a religious doctrine might give. But yeah, how would I deal with that? I guess through reading or through trying to occupy myself with worldly things like music or things like travel or things like time with friends. But any whenever I'm away from a distraction, that it always seems to creep back in.
So, one of the most practical, not a practical, pragmatic questions about that very give very, gave us a lot of existential anxious about: is there any life after death? What do you think about life after death? Do you think that exists?
I'm undecided. Like most, like mo if you most philosophical questions you could ask me, I am still undecided. I'm very, very skeptic in that way. Some people might think it's because, oh, I just have a weak spine or I don't have the balls to take a position, but it's a genuine I just don't know. I can't commit to one side or another. Whether or not there's an afterlife, there very well might be. I would err on the side of it not being something in the way the Judeo-Christian religions like make it out to be, like a heaven and hell type thing. Something maybe a little bit more ethereal or like meta or fluffy, but nothing rigid. No, I'm less likely to believe it's something as rigid as some of the books or some of the main religions make it out to be. It also doesn't trouble me at all thinking there might just not be anything. One thought experiment I like to like think about or give to people is we always ask ourselves, okay, what comes after death? Let's look the other way though. Try and think of a time before you were, before you existed. Try and think about before you were born. There's nothing, right? You can't. It's impossible. You can't do it. There was nothing back then. So it's pretty easy to reason or to like entertain the idea that that might just be what it is afterwards. If it's what it was before, then why not, once we're gone? But I am undecided. I'm pretty undecided on the whole afterlife thing. What about you?
I kind of lean myself towards that there is nothing after death. I kind of think if I really want there is if I come into a conclusion, or at least I come into kind of agreeing with that there is anything after death, I feel like it's just my own subconscious trying to cope with dying, with the fact that we will eventually face death. So I kind of think that is some kind of wager I made, had I make any assumptions about life after death. So although at this point I still not decide anything, but yeah, if I find myself kind of deciding, leaning more towards, yeah, there is a life after death. I think it's me just trying. I always face existential questions about that, especially after my deconversion. And I always say, ah, this is my old indoctrinated state trying to creeping in, try to scare me again about the life after death. At least that's how I feel as of now when I consider those kind of questions. But yeah, but that's my position as of now. What about the existence of God? Is that something that has always been discussed in the academics, and
That
especially
was,
in your
one
fun?
of the larger components of my degree, I'd like to say. Arguments for God. You have design arguments and teleological arguments and cosmological arguments, and a lot of them are very good or convincing. Something like the design argument, for example, would reason that it seems like we were made with purpose, right? Like our eyes, they have the ability to see. They were made for that reason. They were made to see. A chair is made to be sat on. If something was made to do something, then that kind of implies that something made it, right? Or someone made it. If you see a chair, It's very, very reasonable. If you see a chair out in nature, it's very, very reasonable to assume that a human made that chair. That it wasn't very randomly that a tree fell and then like a rock cut the tree and then it just like magically turned into like some chair. That's very tough to believe. It doesn't make much sense. So this whole design argument pushes that. And it says, well, look at all the things in nature that seem purposeful. There seems like our hands are meant to grab things, right? Our legs are meant to walk. We can see with our eyes. And that just implies that we were created in an image of God, right? We were made a certain way. We were made God, made the way God deemed us to be. I'm not terribly convinced about that on two fronts. One front is that it could very well be the case that there was multiple gods. It doesn't, for example, if we consider the phone, you could say yes, it was made with purpose. It was made to make phone calls and stuff. But if you look at who created it wasn't just one person. It was thousands of people. So why couldn't it be the case that thousands of gods came together and made humans? It kind of falls a little bit flat there. Next up, I don't find it very difficult to believe it was all completely random. All completely just by luck that one molecule bumped into another and that led like a causal chain reaction to have humans evolve and then walk around and then have our thoughts. I don't think that's too far out because really random things happen. I think my dad told me one day when I was quite young that the least common day, the least likely day, would be the day in which nothing unlikely happens. So it makes perfect sense to me to reason that there's a lot of places in the universe, there's been a lot of time that's gone by, a lot of rocks have bumped into each other. Maybe this is just some sort of a product of that. That's not too far-fetched for me to believe. But for some people, it is completely far-fetched. And I'm very sympathetic to that position because it would be weird to see a chair in a forest and think, oh, that's just randomly there. A person didn't put it there, right?
Yeah.
That's one argument of God. And there's so many other ones. But very, very interesting branch of philosophy of religion, or arguments for and against God.
Yeah, I think it's kind of like a version of William Paley's watchmaker analogy, if I'm not. Yeah, William Paley's. So there's also one version of fine-tuning arguments that I think is really interesting. Say the cosmological constant. So if we change the number of any cosmological law just by 0.00000001%, or yeah, then the universe could not came to be. So it has to be fine-tuned in a very, very delicate way so existence could happen. Therefore, God. I think the problem here is why should God abide by those laws? If God created the universe with the constant that already there, and he or she or whatever have to abide by those rules, doesn't that make God is subordinate by the laws of cosmology, the laws of logic, the laws of the laws of everything? In my own cultural background, we always see God as something that is transcendental, even from logic. One of my problem with arguing about God's existence, and this goes the both way to the theist, and atheist, is why we should argue something that at the end of the day is not abide by any laws of logic. Because I've asked this kind of question with to one of the most prominent philosophy of religion philosopher out there. If you ever known, I asked this question to Professor Graham Oppy from Australia.
Ah,
You know him,
yes.
right? Yeah, he's a very cool guy, you know. And in his answer is quite interesting. He said that, if you want to make a He said something along the line of import your belief about God as something that is beyond logic. Therefore, you cannot make any conversation about God's existence. Therefore, yeah, you can just believe it the way you want it to be. I think it's interesting. I feel like at the end of the day, anything about God is only exist in our own conception of it. It's not exist objectively within the universe because This is still one of the things that I'm still processing. I'm not convinced yet in the existence of God. I'm an agnostic, extremely agnostic about that one thing. But I kind of think if we keep arguing about God by using laws of logic, by using the syllogism of formal arguments, we don't really describe God at all. It's just my own opinion. But yeah, what do you think about God especially? Is it something that you're comfortable asking? If not, it's okay. We cannot
Yeah,
skip. We can
no,
skip.
for sure. I'm an open book. No, I do think it's quite important to note that you can't presuppose logic before God, because then that would mean that something else is infinite or eternal other than God. God needs to have come first, and then comes logic and all that stuff, other tools. It's metaphysical, right? It's something beyond this world, beyond our logic, beyond our reasoning. It cannot be discussed on a representative basis. Like, it can't be like a one-to-one thing. When we say God is all powerful, this is almost like, it's like an honorific term. It's like as close as it gets when we're talking about it. I'm not sure if you're aware of like Plato's theory of forms.
Not really aware.
But it's basically, it's his idea was that in our world, there doesn't exist any perfect triangles. If you could try and think of any triangle you draw or any type of triangle you might build, it's not going to be perfect or like a perfect equilateral triangle, just like this. It's always going to be a little bit off, right? There's no such thing as the perfect triangle in the world. No matter how precise you try and be, it's never going to be perfect. This triangle only exists in this, like, in the mind. In the mind, or in this other dimension, basically. And that's the dimension in which God would have to reside. And then anything we try and ascribe to God, something like, oh, God is powerful, it's not this perfect power. We can't ascribe perfect power to it because it's like it's in another dimension, right? We can only get really close and we can only think about, okay, powerful like a nuclear bomb or powerful like a big truck, right? We can only have like these indirect honorific ways of like indirect like half-hearted ways of attributing or of giving God these attributes. I don't think it's very possible to ever speak of God or any of his properties if he does exist on a one-to-one basis. It's just beyond our language, beyond our logic, beyond our reasoning.
Okay, let's talk about something a little bit lighter. We've discussed most of the hard topics now. Who's your favorite philosopher?
I still don't have one. I don't have one. I very much enjoy, I like David Hume quite a bit because I guess in a way I'm a little bit like him in that he's pretty skeptical about things. I very much also enjoy Kierkegaard. He's very
Kierkegaard.
nice to read. He's a big advocate of teleological arguments and of the existence of God and all that. I think he's a very good philosopher as well. I would probably put those two up as my favorites, those two up there. I also like some of the metaphysicians or analytical philosophers like Bertrand Russell or Kripke or Quine.
Kripke song, yeah.
And then another one that was pretty interesting was Augustine. I did a course in that last year. He was pretty fun to read. But no, I don't have any definitive favorite philosopher. Do you?
What? I have I if I'm not mistaken, I already made li five a list of five favorite philosopher. Of course, one of my favorite is Aristoteles, solely because he created the scientific method, and then he developed a logical method of yeah he created logic a method of logic. And then Bertrand Russell, David Hume. Of course, I like his skepticism as well. I consider myself as a very hardcore skepticist. And then Graham Oppie, I think he's the best living philosopher in the area of philosophy of religion. And the last one is I kind of ashamed to admit, but it's actually William Lane Craig.
Right, the psychol he was a psychologist, right? As
No,
well
no, no.
as a
No, no.
philosopher?
He's an apologist, a Christian apologist in.
Ah, and he did a lot of work with the cosmological argument, I believe.
Yeah, the Kalam cosmological argument. But I like him. I like him solely because his charisma in his eloquence and his style of rhetoric. I don't really like his ideas. I think his ideas is I don't find his ideas working to me. But I really like his style. So yeah. I've ever tell this list to one of my friends, and he kind of surprised with the fact that I like William Lane Craig, because he's notorious among atheists and agnostics. And then I'm an agnostic, come to them like, look, this William Lane Craig guy is actually quite cool, and justifiably so because his style. But I'm not. I don't really like his idea. But we. But most of today's philosopher must admit that his contribution towards pushing these cosmological arguments drove a very good trend in philosophical discussion about the existence of God. Had William Lane Craig didn't made any of this didn't publish any of his books back in 1970s, I think the discussion of philosophy of religion as of today would not be this diverse and this dynamic. So yeah, I think that's one of the reason. Again, I don't really like his ideas, but still I respect his contribution. So yeah, what do you so that's a favorite philosopher. What is your your least like philosopher? The philosopher that you least like?
That I least like.
Yeah.
Let's see. Like idea wise or the way they write?
Both.
Like are we separating the philosophy from the philosopher in the same way some people like to separate the music from the musician? I oftentimes find myself separating the philosophy from the philosopher. I would have to say down there would be Nietzsche would be one of the lower ranking ones of there. Not because of his style. I really enjoy his style. He's fun to read. But because of how misappropriated he's been, let's say, in like pop culture. So it's not even that much his fault, but but that would be one reason that I kind of dislike him a tiny bit. I also don't go along with or don't enjoy many of his arguments, or even though that he very rarely like puts forward a formal argument. It's more like a story or like a monologue in most of his books. But I don't know. I don't accept or agree with a lot of the things he writes about. Especially in the later third of his life when he started to lose his mind a little bit. Yeah, he would probably be down there, but I wouldn't say I hate him. Or I wouldn't say I dislike him like a lot. It would just if I had the option between reading some like Plato and reading Nietzsche, I'm gonna pick up the Plato book.
Okay. I have a qu question. No, not a question. A quiz. A quiz for you. If Socrates a Pokemon, who do you think he'll be? You play Pokemon?
I did when I was a kid, yes. If
Cool. You played the
Socrates
Gen
is a
1, right?
Pokemon. I played on the Game Boy and on the DS, and I had all the
Oh,
cards as
okay.
well. I had all the playing cards.
Oh, cool.
But
So this so.
he would be. Oh, I think he'd be like Alakazam.
Why?
The psychic, like always like I feel like he would always like appear randomly in a location and then just start talking to strangers and just like that Pokemon would just like appear randomly out of nowhere with his like teleportation powers or whatever. But maybe yeah, like Alakazam or Abra or one of those if I'm remembering my Pokemon correctly. What about
So
you?
here's
What Pokemon would he be for you?
he will be Zubat.
Zubat? Why is that?
We don't really want to see him in the world, right? And
No one likes him, yeah.
apparently no, and apparently he's always appearing out of nowhere. And then he start to use his mouth a lot, right? That's what Zubat practically do. He
He's
use
just a
supersonic, he's
mouth.
use his mouth.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's yeah, that's kind of good. That will be a very good post to make, meme to make if Socrates is. I never
Maybe
think about
make
that.
like I
So
might
yeah.
make like a tier list, but of Pokemon. Like if this philosopher were a Pokemon, it's a good idea.
So yeah, one more. I have one more for you. If Hegel is a Pokemon, who will he be?
Hegel was a Pokemon. That's funny. Who would Hegel be? I have no idea. Maybe I'd want to say like the most chaotic, like a Charizard, like a super chaotic Pokemon.
I think he will be Psyduck. Confused all
Psyduck?
the time. Yeah, I think he's confused all the time.
I don't know if he's confused, but he's really good at confusing others.
Oh yeah, that's a fair point. But I still stand by my point. He's confusing at least. If he's not confused, other he's confused by. I don't think he's confused by himself, but yeah, I think for the sake of joking, I think it works. Yeah, you should make a tier list of if Pokemon is a if philosopher is a Pokemon. I think it's a very fun idea to make.
Yeah, keep an eye out. That might be my next post.
Just
I
don't
like
forget to tag
that.
me, yeah.
I'll tag you.
Okay, one last question for you. If you could bring back one philosopher from the dead and ask him or her for a cup of coffee together, who would she or he be? One philosopher back from the dead.
Great question. I would have to bring back Camus, Albert Camus. I feel like he'd be a cool guy to have a coffee or a beer with. I like his character, his style. I think I would bring him back. Yeah. What about you?
Aristoteles, of course.
Aristotle.
Yeah,
Fair.
but wait, not Aristoteles, because he's kind of a little bit misogynistic, if I'm not mistaken, right? I don't want to bring back misogynistic people back to life. It'd kind of be a problem.
Yeah,
Maybe I will.
there's some debate in academia on whether or not he was a misogynist. Yeah, a lot of
Okay.
discussion there.
I think if I'm not going to bring back Hegel, for the sake of, maybe he can confuse me one more time, this time in real life. I kind of want to bring back, you might never hear of him. His name is Ibn al-Arabi. He's an Arab mystics. We call it a Sufi master. He didn't regard himself as a philosopher, but I think most of his ideas is extremely philosophical. His conception of God is extremely pantheistic. And yeah, I just want to ask him a qu questions about pan-entheistic gods. That is still one of the intriguing concept of God that I really want to talk about. And I think most of Western philosopher by this time still kind of repulsed by the idea of pan-entheism and pantheism altogether. Yeah, maybe yeah. If not Hegel, for the sake of confusing me, Ibn al-Arabi. For the sake of, confusing me again. Okay,
I might have to change my answer. Yeah, I'm changing my answer to Spinoza for the same pantheistic. I have a lot of questions to ask that
Spinoza, yeah,
guy.
cool guy. Yeah, I really like his writing too. Okay, where can we find you, the Phil officer, in social
Phil
media?
Officer, you can find me on Instagram, the underscore Phil Officer, like a police officer, but of philosophy.
Oh, yeah,
And yeah, that's basically where I am. Yeah. So if you guys like jokes, or if anyone's watching this and likes to have a laugh and like make fun of philosophers, then that's the place to go.
Right. Okay, Cristobal Ramirez from the field officer. Thank you very much.
Very, very much.